This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay. The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Here in the Northern Rockies, dark winter months are outlasted in basements, dens, and nooks where kindred souls gather together to share intel, swap fly patterns, and relive the memories from seasons past. This gathering spot, known locally as the February Room, is the inspiration for this podcast. No matter the season, the door is always open to those with a fly fishing story to tell. Brought to you by CD Fishing USA, the North American distributor for composite development fly rods and accessories. 40 years of Kiwi ingenuity and graphite technology now available at cd-fishing.us or your local CD USA dealer. Follow us on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. And remember to go fishing. Here's your host, the Carnops, and this is the February Room.
Scroll through an outfitter's page, you can normally get a good read on their expertise on their home waters. It's their bread and butter, of course. Sometimes, though, an outfitter will provide a hosted trip to a destination that is on every fly fishing enthusiast's bucket list. Today, my guest, Brett Wedeking of Tail Out Anglers, based in Seattle, informs me more about managing both these operations. Thank you so much for joining me today, Brett.
Hi.
We have a lot to talk about today, but before we get into more about these hosted trips, which are obviously incredible, I've clicked the links and looked at these videos. I want to go to all of them. Let's hear more about, let's hear a fishing story.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on. This is really exciting. I tried to think of a bunch of fishing stories. It's kind of funny when I was, you know, reading the little outline, I was like, what do I have for fishing stories? And I was like, and then I started thinking and I was like, I have so many stories, like some just weird, silly, I don't know, you know, being a guide is just full of craziness every single day.
Well, those are my favorite ones though. The silly ones are my favorite story. Like you can tell me about your big catch, but I want to hear the ones that are like crazy.
Yeah. So, I used to guide in Alaska, out in Southwest Alaska on a steelhead river out there. And, we had two guys that came up. One had been there before and one hadn't. They were fishing together all week. And it's the ends of the earth out there. It's like, you know, mountains with glaciers and huge bears running around all over, and, you know, black sand beaches. And it's crazy. And there's this volcano that's behind the lodge. I don't know. It's like 20 or 30 miles. And it's got huge glaciers on it. And one fall, it was erupting like almost nonstop through the entire season. And there's like flames shooting out of it and smoke and all sorts of stuff. It was just really surreal. And one day it was super foggy and we're driving up river with these two guys and we hear it like booming, like thunderous booms, you know, echoing through the tundra. And we didn't really know what was going on. And we were kind of just like, well, I guess if this is how it ends, this is, you know, pretty cool place to be. We couldn't see anything. And we all kind of just looked at each other like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was wild. So we get up to this run and it's super long and it's full of fish. You know, we knew where the fish are and the one dude who's been there just jumps in the water and just starts wailing away. And I kind of coach the other guy and, you know, get him in position. And, you know, 5 minutes later he hooks and lands a steelhead and he's like, this is just, wow, this is so cool and whatever. And, I'm like, okay, yeah, you know, so we take pictures and whatever. And I'm like, okay, like, cool, get back in there. And he's like, all right, yeah, yeah. And like, you know, 10 minutes later, he catches another steelhead. And he's like, this is just like, it's so cool. And he sits down in the grass and he's like, all right, like, what's next? And I'm like, what do you mean, what's next? And he's like, well, I caught two fish. Like, what do we do now? Like, day's over, right? And I was like, what? And he's like, dude, I caught two fish in 2 years at home. And I was like, dude, get your rod, get back in the water and go catch another fish. And, you know, 5-10 minutes later, he catches another fish and another one and another one. And he's just like dumbfounded at what, like, he didn't know, you know, places like this existed. And to be fair, I mean, it's, you know, well, that whole region out there is the most spectacular place on earth, you know, in a lot of ways. But it was just really funny, just the like the perspective and you know, he was just like, I'm done. It was just like day one too, like out of 6 days.
And was it still like rumbling as he's fishing? Is it still like volcano?
Oh, yeah. And that part kind of stopped like, you know, later in the day, it went back to just, you know, when we could see again, just shooting fire and whatever. And mostly you could see it just at night. You see the flames and stuff. But yeah. And then the other guy, he's like, we called him Fist Bump because anything he would talk about or he'd catch a fish or anything like that, he would fist bump you, but like really hard, like punch you in the hand. And so he did it once to me and I just said, nuh-uh, don't ever do that to me again. And he kind of got upset about that. I didn't want anything to do. Yeah. I mean, he would like hit you like to your knuckles would bruise.
You're like, dude, I'm a fishing guide. I'm not an MMA fighter.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, yeah, and you know, it's like, let's just, you know, let's go fish. It's great. So he, you know, and he's just kind of a, you know, happy go lucky, like, you know, surfer kind of dude. And, so every time he catches a fish, like I said, he'd been there before, he kind of knew the program. Every time he catch a fish, he'd pull out this roll up a bong that looked like a dildo and no joke. And he would fill it with river water. And he would sit in the grass and just, you know, just smoke a bowl and just kind of lay there in the grass for like, you know, 10 or 15 minutes or whatever, and then roll it back up, like pour the water out, roll it back up, put it in his pocket and go back to fishing. He'd catch another fish and pull it back out.
You were just like basically guiding someone just to like have them like half the time just get like so high.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I mean, that's kind of a normal part of fishing, but it was just like... Right. Non-stop. It was just so funny. And he'd wade out like, you know, just like chest deep every time and just like run through the river. I'm like, dude, the fish are behind you. He's like, no, I know where I'm doing. I'm going. Yeah. I'm like, okay, cool. And he'd catch fish just fine. But God, it was just so funny. Yeah. He'd just pull out this bong. It was like a latex, like rubbery dildo bong is what we called it and fill it with
river
water.
Did he have a name for it?
No, I can't. Maybe he did. I can't remember. But it was like green, like neon green,
oh,
or like
gosh.
Glow in the dark green or something. I don't know. It was
between the volcano and the dildo bong. You're just like I'm.
Yeah.
Like, and then the other guy is this the way like, I want to end my life? And
I know.
Is this how I want my last day to be? Like they're having the best time, but you're like, is this the last thing I want to see?
Yeah, exactly. So and I was. You know, every day guiding in Alaska is something new and memorable, but that was just one of the kind of most funny and bizarre sorts of days, in my career.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, Jess and I just came 2 weeks ago for the first time ever. I went to Alaska. Cool. I've never been to Alaska before. And we went fishing with Justin's buddy up there, AK Fishiology, Mark Wackler. And it was off of Soldotna. We're on the Kenai. And so I've never experienced anything like that before in my life. First off, kind of that image that you were talking about, Alaska and these river, the Kenai is busy. I didn't realize how busy the Kenai is. And so I thought for sure, like I would be the only person in Alaska fishing this river and nobody would be there. And then that experience that you're talking about, like fishing, like the, you know, we're fly fishing and we're on this boat and I was like casting and I think the first fish I have on is a pink. Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh. Oh God, everybody come here, come close. Like I'm catching some fish on the fly and it's like a pink. And he's like, oh, it's a pink. And I was like, okay. And then like the next fish I catch is a pink. And then I finally get to the conclusion that pink are not awesome fish to catch on the Kenai. You shouldn't even take a picture of them. But in the very beginning that, you know, you're like, holy smokes, you see this huge fish? Like it's, what is this? And then when I have a silver on and then Mark Wackler super stoked about it, I'm like, oh, okay. So now I've come to the conclusion that catching pink on the fly is not, it's like catching a white fish. Yeah. No one's really stoked about it, but catching a silver is amazing. And one of the coolest things though on this trip is that Jess and I went off the Kenai and kind of did our do it yourself. And we went to this river and we were swinging. Justin was swinging for silvers because we hear there were silvers there, but randomly Justin had a steelhead.
Oh, cool.
And I guess it's really early in the season for that to happen. But when you get caught off guard like that, because we were like, oh, we're just going to catch some silver. And when Justin swung, he's like, wait a second. This is not a silver. This is actually
that's cool.
A steelhead.
Yeah.
It was so cool. And but yeah, like having that experience in Alaska, just catching so many fish where you, like you said, you don't get that anywhere in the world, you know, other than Alaska, you can really manage to catch a lot of fish. And it was one of those experiences that I'll remember for my entire life. But yeah, I think that was, it was eye-opening just how crazy that fishery is up there.
Perspective is a really important thing when you've lived up there or guided up there or fished or whatever. And, you know, like you said, you caught a pink. You know, around here, there's some people love pinks in the Northwest. I mean, we've got a pretty good pink salmon run every other year. And, you know, some people just detest them. And it's kind of the same in Alaska. But it's like, you know, if the client or whoever it is, or, you know, DIY fishing or whatever, and you catch a bunch of pinks, like, that's awesome. It's so cool. You know, we get so jaded when you have that perspective. You're like, well, I caught 10 pinks and only 2 silvers. But like, yeah, but you caught, you know, a dozen salmon a day. Like how many people can say that?
Well, and also like the river, when we were on the anchor and we were doing it ourselves, we caught, I mean, no, like, cause obviously there's more people on the river too. So you can see some, you have your section and your zone and no one was really catching any fish, but Justin and I caught like, you know, 2 pinks. I caught a silver and it was awesome. I wouldn't change it for the world. Even though it was very popular place.
It's a small river too.
There was plenty of fish for everybody. Like that's the thing that's so cool about Alaska is in Montana, if you were fishing the Clark Fork, you wouldn't be too hyped to see that there was that many, you know, if you had it like vice versa, right? Like that many people in Alaska on the Clark Fork, you'd be like, what in the heck? Like there's not that many fish. Like, but you could be like, okay, I'm going to take a turn running down it. And then you follow me back. Like everyone could catch a fish. It's just, that's how crazy it is.
Yeah. And it's funny too. Like you talking about just how many people are out there, you know, people come out to like those fly out lodges and pay, you know, like thousands and thousands of dollars for a week of fishing. And, you know, they fly out to like some river and there's like 20 or 30 or 40 other boats on it and all airplanes taking off and landing. And they're like, what? Like where do all these people come from? And you're just like, the same thing as you're trying to do out here. But, you know, there's, like you said, there's so many fish and so much water that it's usually not that big a deal.
Yeah, I think that, exactly. There is so many fish, and the Kenai is huge too. So like, it can obviously host that many people, but it does. I think, you know, you have this image in your mind of what you're going to go to Alaska, and you're like, I'm going to be like the only person. And there's going to be this picture of me with the mountains behind me. But then you're like, there's a picture of me, and there's some anglers over here to the left and a little bit to the right. And let me just, it just, I'm still beautiful. If, you know, don't let that obviously deter you from your adventures to Alaska, but it was just like one of those things. No one told me that everyone likes to go to Alaska too. Yeah. But let's talk about Brett, because you have a lot going on at Tail Out Angler. It's really cool. You're based in Seattle. I want to learn more about your operation. Let's start off with the bread and butter. What are you doing up there?
I guide, multiple fisheries. Kind of depends on, you know, the season. So you kind of got to chase the fish through the seasons. Most of what I do is guiding for Sea Run Cutthroat in Puget Sound.
So cool. I need to learn more about this. I've never done that before. Can you go a little bit more into detail? How do you target these fish?
So it's trout fishing, but it's in salt water, and they do run up the rivers, and you can catch them in the rivers, and that's really fun too. Mine is my, you know, backyard fishery is Puget Sound proper, like right out of Seattle. And we catch, you know, cutthroat. I kind of make a joke of this usually, but we catch cutthroat like within sight of the Space Needle. and it's, you know, it's trout fishing. We use 6-weight rods and we fish small streamers, little bait fish patterns. And the cutthroat out there are native trout species. They're anadromous, just like a salmon or a steelhead. So they'll run up the rivers and creeks to spawn. And they'll spend a lot of time out in the saltwater, just chasing bait fish and shrimp and whatever. And I fish out of a boat, a power boat with a trolling motor. So we use that to control our drifts. And what's really unique about it is it's a protected saltwater fishery. So we don't deal, like there's wind waves and that kind of thing and boat wakes and stuff, but there's no like swell. There's no big ocean waves or anything like that. So, you know, it's a really unique in that perspective. It's saltwater, but you're not, you know, it's more like a lake and
so cool.
There's a lot there's a lot of water there that's actually more like a river than a lake because of the tides. So the tides exchange twice a day here. And depending on where you're fishing, there are some areas that look, I mean, fully like a river with like riffles and, you know, rock gardens and drop-offs and things like that. And you're drifting with the current, you know, down these. And I, like I said, I use a trolling motor to control my boat and casting at structure. And the water's really clear. And you're usually fishing in shallow water, you know, no more than like, you know, from a foot to 10 feet deep is really common. So you can see the bottom.
Wow.
You can see fish chase your fly. So we're not necessarily casting at a specific fish, but it is sight fishing in that you're casting at structure and you're watching fish come chase your fly and eat your fly, which is really, really cool and unique. And you know, I love taking people from, you know, the Midwest or the South or wherever that don't have any sort of barometer for what that this kind of fishing is like. And, you know, you're seeing seals and porpoises and eagles and deer. And if you're really lucky, you'll see orcas. you know, it's just, and then, you know, you turn around and you see the Olympics or you see Mount Rainier or you see the city.
The Space Needle.
It's such a unique thing. And it's kind of an urban fishery because it's so close to Seattle and Tacoma, but it's also, you know, if you get on the backside of some of these islands and stuff or back in these little bays, it just looks like you're in the middle of nowhere. You know, I see a few houses or whatever, but, you know, there's a lot of state parks and county parks where it's just huge swaths of undeveloped land. And the same is even more so around Hood Canal, which is just like the next waterway west of Puget Sound. But it's all kind of connected, but it's a unique fishery that I really enjoy. And it's, you can do it from the beach too. It's you know, much better from a boat, more, you know, get a lot more versatility, but a lot of people do it from the beach. You know, a boat in salt water is also a total pain in the ass.
Yeah.
With all sorts of, you know, things that cost you a lot of money.
Problems. You know what they say about a boat? Bring out another thousand. That's what it stands for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's like, if I wasn't making money with my boat, my power boat, I probably wouldn't have it, which sounds stupid, but it's such a pain in the butt to keep a boat that you run in salt water. You know, just keep it running and, you know, in good shape.
Well, and also like just Seattle's weather. I mean, it's not even just on the water, right? You have to make sure that it's being taken care of out of the water.
Yeah, definitely keep it covered up at all times.
Yeah. I'm curious though, Brett. So like if you're targeting these trout, like how are you rigging your fly line? Like, because I mean, you could potentially catch anything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point where we, so I don't have, so this is kind of complicated, but I don't have a salmon charter license. Those are super expensive and you can't just buy one. You have to, there's a moratorium on new ones in the state. So you have to buy one from somebody who's willing to sell one to you. And they're tens of thousands of dollars. So the ROI on that for a fly fishing guide is not great. However, yeah,
that's like liquor license here in Montana. Yeah. They don't give them out. Yeah. So they sell them for really, really expensive.
Yeah. And, cutthroat are trout and a game fish, and it's Puget Sound is open year round for trout. And we do incidentally catch coho occasionally, if you're really lucky, like a Chinook or, you know, humpies, pink salmon in odd years. And, you know, those are from, you know, 8 inches to 8 pounds.
Right.
And that's, you know, they live in the same water and they eat the same food. So yeah, you know, you can catch kind of anything out there. You know, if I'm out there fishing in 300 feet of water, you know, somebody might report me for fishing salmon. But, you know, you're fishing for cutthroat. And if you, you know, run into a coho, that's always a fun, you know, bycatch. But we catch sculpins out there. We catch flounder. We catch like piling perch. You know, there's all sorts of weird stuff out there, like you're saying.
So cool.
And the lines we use, so we use 5 and 6 weight rods, you know, trout rods. The lines we use are really specialty for streamer fishing. And I usually use a clear intermediate line. The one I really like is the Rio Coastal Quick Shooter. It's an integrated shooting head line that has a color change on it where the head and the running line meet.
Nice.
Yeah. And
I love those.
Yeah, it's awesome. And then sometimes we use faster sinking lines like the Rio Outbound or the Airflow 40 Plus or the, I can't remember the SA line. It's one of their Titan sonar lines, but those are really great too. Can't remember the exact name of it, but yeah. So basically just a, kind of a light shooting head that just allows people to cast further easier. I have taken people out that are like super green, and you know, they catch fish. It's not a fishery that you have to be an expert at, but you have to have basic casting skills because you need to throw the line, you know, 40, 50 feet or more. So it's much better to do a float trip or a walk and wade trip or something, which I also do in the summertime, you know, just to slow that pace down a little bit if you're a rank beginner. And I do a lot of instruction too. I love teaching people who've never picked up a fly rod before. But the Puget Sound thing requires a little bit of casting skills, but by no means do you need to be a experienced, you know, seasoned veteran.
But you might as well, you do need to learn that you have to at least cast.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to go out there for the first time, like, I've never touched a fly rod before. Like,
yeah,
where do you want me to cast
it?
It
gets a little tough, you know, but we also catch, like I said, we catch fish in shallow water and we catch fish, you know, sometimes literally at the boat. You know, they'll chase a fly. You'll watch them and they'll eat it like right at the stern of the boat, or they'll get spooked and swim away. But it's amazing how sometimes when they want that fly, you're not going to take it away from them. You can't strip it fast enough. I mean, they're like, it's pretty wild when they smash that fly.
That's like my favorite thing is watching the fish come and like chase the fly, whether it's an eat or not, but sometimes you're just like, when you see it coming, like for here in Montana, we can see the smallmouth or like,
pike, oh yeah,
you know, cause it's like so clear and you see it. And sometimes the fish will just like, you know, obviously come straight to the boat and then turn around and you're just like, oh my gosh, but how cool was that to see that fish really doing its instinct, just its nature,
yeah, you know, predatory. That's its,
yeah. And it's so cool to see that. So sometimes even when you don't even catch a fish, I'm like, that was awesome. That was so cool.
That's very similar to here too. You get a lot of, a lot more action than you get fish in the net. So the percentage of fish you see or grab your fly or you hook and get off to like fish in the net is, I'm not going to say it's low, but it's not like, you know, 80% of the fish you see, you're going to put in the net. But it's, you know, it's half, or less depending on the day. but yeah, you're, yes. You know, like you said, it's super cool to see those fish come chase your fly, to grab at that fly. Just see their predatory instincts is a lot of fun, I think.
So you can do this though, all year round.
Yeah. The area I fish is, there's fish around all year. My high season is kind of like April through November. We can, you know, the weather gets a little sketchy, especially if somebody's traveling from out of town. You know, I wouldn't recommend to be in the winter or spring. But there are other areas of Puget Sound down south that are amazing during like January, like middle of winter, super, super good fishing. It's just the geography and the hydrology and just the way the fish behave and just how they migrate kind of changes depending on where you are in Puget Sound.
They just sound like they're a little bit moody, just like sometimes Seattle can be.
Yeah.
The weather can be in Seattle. They match the weather in Seattle. Yeah. Well, then I'm curious then, Brett. So we also have this hosted trips. So how are you able to manage doing that? And also, I mean, let's ask this, like, how do you make time to do these hosted trips? Because you go everywhere. Like these, go to the website and check out these places. We were just talking about Ishkalak,
yeah,
which you just said that you just came back. I mean, I don't know how are you able to do it all?
Well, first of all, I have a wife with a regular paycheck who's very understanding of a man who is not meant for a, you know, desk job, 9-to-5 kind of thing. As much as time as I do spend at the computer.
Funny. But, yeah. You know, they say behind a good man is an even better one.
Yeah. Or behind any fishing guide is a good spouse of, you know, of with a steady paycheck. And, you know,
well
it's such maybe it's a little off course, but it's, you know, with COVID and all the weather related things. And, like last year I broke my wrist in the spring. I was out for 2 months. You know, and they closed some of our steelhead fisheries, which actually affected other guides more than it did me, but it still, you know, still affected me quite a bit. There's a lot of sort of unknown, I mean, same in Montana with hoot owls and the floods in Yellowstone and all that.
Of course.
And it's so unpredictable sometimes being a guide that, it's, you know, I'm really fortunate to be able to have, someone who, you know, like if I'm out of commission or, you know, for flooded rivers or whatever, like, oh, well, we're not going to lose the house. Like, you know, that's
right.
Important.
No, that's like, you need somebody who's like, who's really structured in that, in that sense. Yeah, absolutely.
So that does translate to me being able to do hosted trips. And it's something that I've done since, I can't even remember. My first hosted trip was like 2005, I want to say, 5 or 6, maybe 7, to Alaska West, up in Southwest Alaska, on the Kanektok River. And I was in my, you know, mid-20s then. And I kind of got some help from the guys. I worked at a fly shop then, Creekside Angling Company in Issaquah, Washington, for a long time, and still work with those guys. But they helped me out. One of the guys there was a manager of the camp and kind of was like, yeah, you know, bring a few people and I can get you up there and, you know, comp you a spot. And it kind of just opened my eyes to like, oh, I could do this and like go all over the place, you know? And I've just, you know, I've developed a loyal cadre of clients who like to travel with me. And even more in the last few years, quite a few more clients who just want to go travel and do fun stuff. And, you know, balancing it is tough. I mean, I say it's tough, but it's like the dream job too, right? I mean, it's
right,
there's a lot harder things out there. But it does require...
No one's saying, oh, poor Brett.
Yeah,
poor Brett.
Nobody's feeling bad for me.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it does require a lot of time and there's a lot of headaches involved with, you know, deposits and people saying they want to go and then getting sick. Or, you know, I've had people, a friend of mine broke her foot like a month before a trip to Belize. And I was like, you know, you're not getting money back. Like, it's, you know, it's, I hope you have trip insurance. And she didn't. And, you know, I shouldn't say I hope you have trip insurance. I try and get all of my clients to do so, whether they do or not, right, is up to them. But I was able to fill that spot, and, you know, guy got a cheap trip out of it. And, but it's, you know, there's a ton of headaches like that. And,
you're kind of like a travel agent, right?
You are. Yeah. And you're responsible for your clients. You know, I take that very seriously. I want to book places for my clients that I want to go, but also that my clients are going to have fun. And I want to book with good operations. Like Jesse's operation in X Flats is, in Ishkalak is amazing. It's super, super cool. And honestly, the week we went, we had terrible weather, like cloudy and windy all week. And I had some people who had never flats fished before and some people who were experienced. And, you know, everybody had a great time. Everybody had a good attitude. Everybody caught bonefish. So a bunch of people caught their first, you know, handful of bonefish. You know, we chased permit, we chased triggers and tarpon and snook, which was all tough due to the weather, but it was an awesome trip. Jesse's lodge is great. And I had people that were like, you know, at the end of the week of tough fishing and tough weather, they were like, hey, so when do we get to come back here? And I was just like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, I want to come back for sure. But it just, you know, working with places like that is awesome. And there's a lot of wonderful lodges out there. And there's certainly some sort of fly-by-night operations or, you know, it's just people are super spacey or whatever it is that, you know, just are places that I wouldn't want to take my clients because it just makes my job harder. And, you know, if you have bad food or if you have, you know, like dirty, you know, rooms or I don't know, whatever. I haven't really run into that much, if at all. But
does that work out though, Brett? Like, so you're the host. Do you just reach out to these places and then you're the travel agent, but then can you go there and then you fish with their outfitting business? Is that how that works?
Yeah. I'm essentially a client and they have a program where, you know, you book X amount of people. Usually it's book, you know, 5 and 6 goes for free or 7 and 8 or 9 and 10 or whatever it is. And that person gets to go for free and, you know, it could be, and usually there's a commission involved so I can make a little bit of money.
Because you're also doing all the work, like
and
booking flights and
And it's not unlike what, you know, Yellow Dog does or Fly Water, but it's obviously on a one man scale. I'm not sort of, as much as it would be great to do that full time, I'm not like advertising like, hey, Brett's travel service, like, you know, everybody from around the world, call me and I'll send you somewhere. It's something for my clients and for me, you know, to go travel together and do all this, you know, fun stuff and go fishing cool places. I'd love to expand that if I could and, you know, book more trips with more people. Like I said, I want to go cool places. My clients want to go places and I want to take them there and show them a good time. And they trust me. And that's really the bottom line is I've got, you know, a loyal clientele who trust me to take them to a fun place. That even if you have bad weather all week is still going to be a place that has great food and good accommodations and is in a beautiful setting and, you know, has good guides that work hard. You know, all the things that you can control. Right. And then just, you know, you're always rolling the dice with weather. And that's just, you know, that's fishing.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And I mean, that's 100% fishing.
Yeah.
You know, I was kind of ringing back, like, going back to, you know, you said that there was a lady who canceled her trip and you had the opening. And I mean, I've been on Instagram where someone's like, hey, last minute, someone canceled. We're going to this destination. And sometimes I'm like, dude, maybe I should do it. But my biggest hesitation to ever wanting to do that is like, who are these people? Will I like them? Will they like me? How will I fit with this group? How do you manage like your groups? Are you just like take anybody, or will you make a phone call and be like, are you a good fit for us? Like, yeah. How does that work?
I'm lucky enough to, I don't want to say I'm like, I haven't been doing this for 40 years and I'm booked out like 3 years in advance kind of thing, but,
which you are booked though. I looked on your website. And it's like awful, awful, awful. I'm like, yeah. Oh man, guess I'm not going to go to Tarpinville.
That would have been really fun trip.
Yeah. That looked amazing.
And we caught permit then too, which was also incredible.
So crazy.
Yeah. It's, it's with all my trips are with clients that I've already fished with pretty much. And there's certainly some newer people. Like I'm taking a group to Cuba in February of next year, and we have, including me, 18 people. And that trip kind of exploded on me. And I have actually a co-host now who's a buddy of mine, who's a rep around here, who's helping me with some of the stuff. And we also have a booking agent, because Cuba is just weird. And, you know, with all the travel restrictions and stuff. And I have
it only opened up not too long ago. Like, wasn't that during the Obama? So
yeah. And I have a buddy of mine who I've known a long time, who I trust, who does that for a living. So he's kind of the liaison to the outfitter, and I'm the liaison to all my clients. And so that helps when I can't, you know, it's a lot harder to just to go direct to a lodge, you know, with in Cuba. But there's a couple of these guys I haven't met, but I know, you know, they sort of join the group because of other people who I know and who I trust. And honestly, as much as, you know, I have so many stories and every guide does about, you know, the nightmare client. But it's like, that's so much more rare than we as guides, you know, want to complain about. You know, I can be as cynical as anybody else, but there's so many clients who are just so, you know, wonderful to be around and are great people and really just want to go fishing and have a good time. And, with travel, you know, as long as you understand that shit happens and you gotta, you know, when you're in Central America or, you know, wherever, like things just run a little differently than they do, you know, in New York City or, you know, Seattle or whatever. So you just gotta have people that are willing to go with the flow and know that, you know, you're trying to do the best you can. And when something goes sideways, you know, you're just going to make the best of the situation and the lodge is going to help you out. And, you know, the guides are going to work hard and,
I imagine you're not getting people who are like, I'm going to spend all this money and I'm a beginner fly angler.
Not usually. You know, there's, it goes back to Alaska. My lodge manager always had this saying, you know, people would get off the airplane and be like, wow, you know, this is great. Like never done spey casting before, but you know, like this sounds great. And he would go, hey, Larry, you like golf? Oh yeah. I golf all the time. Yeah. You ever played Augusta? No. Like that would be, you know, a lifetime, you know. And he'd go, well, if you got invited to Augusta, do you think you'd practice a little bit beforehand? He'd go, oh yeah, man, I'd be hitting balls every day, da, 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 you know, this and that. And he goes, well, you're at Augusta, bud. Good luck. And the guy kind of like look at him. And my lodge manager is a total, just total funny, kooky guy. And
Love those guys.
If you knew him, this is like right up, you know, right spot on for him. But again, like I'd kind of look around and be like, huh, okay. And then, you know, we'd teach him how to spay cast and he'd catch some fish and it'd all be fine. But
you're also like spending that much money. Like that always kind of blows my mind. Cause always a great time to learn, but I couldn't imagine like booking somebody to take me fishing and be like, so I didn't practice any of my double haul. I didn't do my spay casting. Cause I'm like, Justin's really working with me and trying to get the spay cast dialed. Cause there's nothing more embarrassing than like doing as I'm doing my spay cast and like doing my loop and then like launching it. And it's like, like right in front of your feet. Like, God, this is embarrassing. Like, I hope nobody's watching me. And then of course there's the boat, you know, I'm always doing it at the boat ramp for some reason. And there's a pile of people looking at me. I'm like, yeah, you like that? You want to come out here and show me? Because I'm the only one doing it. But yeah, I mean, practice makes, you know, doesn't make perfect, but you can get a little bit better.
Yeah, practice makes better. And like you said, you're spending a lot of money and a lot of time. You know, a lot of people just you know, they don't have lots of time to do this. So when they go on vacation, they want to, you know, make the best of it. And yeah, practicing is good.
Well, let's just be honest. Those permit guides are like yelling at you. So you better have a thick skin.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I've found in you know, Belize and Mexico and Costa Rica and stuff, you know, the guides that are permit guides, they often want to catch that permit more than you. And a lot of it is like bragging rights, you know, to their fellow guides or, you know, whoever. And, or in the Bahamas, like, you know, the guide wants to catch a 10-pound bonefish, probably more than you, because that makes, you know, that puts him in, you know, high esteem with his colleagues, right? Or he can show that picture around and brag. And, so, you know, that, but that also just makes those guides work that much harder, even if it is a selfish sort of thing. I mean, if they're into it, they're into it, you know, and, you know, that's like steelhead guides too. You know, I do, now it's a little different now. We've had a lot of problems with steelhead, but in the past and also now and in the future, I've guided summer steelhead and winter steelhead, and the Grand Ronde and the Skagit and Olympic Peninsula. Just things have changed a lot in the last couple of years, but you know, when swinging flies for steelhead is not easy. And, you know, I want to catch that fish and I often want to catch it more than my clients, you know, cause I'm putting my whole life into it. And, you know, clients put in a day or two, and not to negate their, you know, want to go do that. I mean, they're out there to have a good time and catch a fish and see, you know, some new cool stuff. But, the dedication that a lot of guides, you know, have put into it, and even more so than me. I mean, I know people who've moved, you know, somewhere like, you know, British Columbia or out to Forks or the Oregon coast or whatever to be a steelhead guide, just to fish as much as possible. And, you know, that dedication is pretty incredible. They love those fish and they want to see them. They want to catch them. They want to get people into them.
Yeah. I mean, back to Justin Steelhead, it's the first steelhead I've seen in person. And
on the anchor,
look at that fish. Yeah. It's really spectacular. Like that fish who's really big made it. Like, I mean, that fish has probably gone through so much hardship to make it up to that point. And to think that one fish that you caught at that time, like your paths met that fish who's already gone through, who knows what it's, you know, gone through in the ocean and it's had somehow avoided being eaten or killed and then made it up to the river. That blows my mind. I'm like, that is a resilient fish. And the fact that like you came across that fish's lifespan, I mean, and its journey up the river, that blows my mind. I think it's like the most unique thing that you can come across.
It is. Life. Anadromous fish are, in my opinion, the most amazing creatures on the planet. I mean, the survival rates, you know, I'm not a biologist by any stretch, but I try and, you know, I talk to a lot of biologists and I try and follow a lot of the, you know, conservation stuff and all that and participate when I can. But the for wild steelhead, the survival rates from, you know, from fry to adulthood, like to return, are a lot of times like between 1 and like, if it's super, super good, like 7-8%. So like, you know, 1%, 3-5% from what I understand is pretty common for a lot of places. And that varies across their range, you know, if it's summer or winter and how far they have to travel and stuff. But
that is incredible. I mean, it's
super low.
Just saying that, like, I mean, you're holding a fish that it's beaten the odds and it's still going to try and beat the odds when you release it. Like its journey, like maybe it'll make it again, but most likely probably not. But you were part of that fish's story. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just such a beautiful thing. But yeah, I mean, steelhead, we could talk about steelhead all the time. I just find them to be so amazing. But you're also like kind of going out of your, you know, your comfort zone from these like steelhead waters and really expanding your, exploring these waters. Like, how do you even figure out which destination you want to go? Is it based on like what you want to fish, or you're like, you know what, I've heard that these people have a good operation. Do you first rely on outfitters and then location, or is it location and then let's figure out what's the best outfit for us?
It depends on, there's sort of several things. I mean, it depends on where I want to go and where my clients want to go. and it depends on, you know, some places there's half a dozen outfitters in one town, right? Or what, like in Punta Allen in Ascension Bay, Mexico. But a lot of it is, you know, I have people who have told me about places or have been places and say, hey, this lodge is really awesome. Or, you know, some places just have excellent reputations. Like, you know, I've been to Turnip Flats in Belize, like I think 3 times. And, you know, they have an awesome reputation. They've been around a long time. And I know, you know, multiple people that have been there. And it's so I feel comfortable like contacting them and knowing that I'm going to get a good experience for my clients. And, you know, like X Flats, you know, Jesse, I knew a couple people that had been down there several times and were just like, hey, man, this guy's got it dialed, you know. So it's kind of word of mouth.
He's got good personality, too.
Oh, he's
awesome. So I feel
like awesome.
Both of you guys super would fun. Mesh so well together because we've had him on the podcast. And
yeah, and we had a super fun time down there. The whole group did. And yeah, it just depends on, it. You know, word of mouth, reputation. I know I always want to talk to somebody who's been there. You know, and then talk to the owner or the manager and kind of get a feel for it and see what, you know, what their program is. You know, some places don't have hosted trip programs. They just don't have the margins or they don't need to, you know, if they're super duper booked, you know, years in advance, yeah. They don't need to have hosted trip programs. So there's that too. And some of the places are more, you know, like you book a hotel, you book some guides and you have to put it together yourself, which is more work, but also enjoyable and rewarding. Like I'm taking a group back to New Orleans or outside of New Orleans in end of November this year to go redfish. And I did the same thing last year. And we rent a house and we get guides together and, you know, we rent a car and we actually do all of our own cooking. But I have a caterer who I use who designs a menu for us and like does all the shopping like online for us. So it just
glorious.
Cuts down all the like all this, yeah, this extra work. And thought, and you know, she designs meals that we can cook that are super easy and simple when we get home and we're tired and all we need to do is have a beer and shoot a game of pool. So that kind of thing, again, it's a little more work, but it's also a lot of fun. You know, it's a little more independent. You get, you know, your group is just your group. There's no other people around. And so
say I was like, you know, say I'm like, hey, Brett, I want to go on one of these hosted trips. Like, how would that process go? Would you, because obviously you're already pretty much booked for everything. Would we like have this conversation like the way that we're doing it now? And you'd be like, you know what? I think this is the best trip for maybe in 2 years from now or a year from now. I'll start catering a trip to that'll accommodate to you and like the group of people that you'll be with.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that's basically how it goes. You know, if somebody I talk to or, you know, I'll talk to my like kind of loyal travelers and say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this one or this one or this one. Who's interested? And like right now I'm kind of trying to figure out, you know, winter, spring, like 23, 24, like for next winter. I've got 2 trips going this winter and trying to figure out what I want to do. And you know, I just heard that Christmas Island is going to be closed through 2022. So that kind of, and who knows when it's going to open back up now. It's been delayed so many times. So that kind of takes that off the menu. And that's kind of been on my list for a while. You know, I want to do a peacock bass trip to Colombia, but
yes.
Colombia they've essentially outlawed sport fishing or may have. We don't really know how it's all going to play out. So that's a whole nother, you know, thing. So
bag of worms that you're not ready to like just dive into quite yet.
Yeah. So I can't, you know, I don't want to take my clients to, like book a trip in Colombia and be like, oh yeah, come on down, spend all this money. And then like a year later be like, oh yeah, there's no sport fishing anymore. Like, sorry, your money's gone. Like
yeah.
That's, so it's like you're kind of talking about before doing your due diligence and finding operations that are trustworthy and, is really important. And, you know, if it's, something too, that somebody's like, hey, I want to go sooner or I want to go on a different, like I've already got a trip that's booked or whatever, you know, I can send someone to a lodge that I know is a good lodge or a place I've been to before. And you know, I can contact the lodge and, you know, act as that travel agent for them. I've got several fly shops I work with to get people geared up, depending on, you know, what they need for the trip. And, you know, that lodge will usually give me a commission for that. So if, you know, there is a financial incentive as well.
Well, I mean, also you are doing a lot of the work and you're finding people like, you know, can't do everything for free. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I think that's so well worth it. So you do have to put in your books. I do. Okay. These are my list of three things I would love to do, Brett. So think of me.
Yeah.
I want to go somewhere warm. I'd love a fighting fish. I'd love to do the peacock bass or tarpon. Never caught, obviously, either one of them. So, and my skill level is, I feel like I'm intermediate. Like I can do a double haul and I'm learning to do some trout, you know, doing some spay casting. So I can practice in that time, if you can give me like a year or two. But that'd be my list of things I'd like to do.
Yeah. Well, then we'll take you to the place I'm going in February. We'll just go to Cuba next year.
Oh my gosh.
They have year round, they have juvenile tarpon from like 5 to 25 pounds in the mangroves. And
first off, I'd love to go to Cuba. I just think the culture there looks amazing. Like so bright, so colorful. Like
yes.
Everyone's just, yeah, the music is, yeah, the music, everything. That, yeah, sign me up for Cuba. If you actually do that, please put a spot for me and Justin. We both would love to do something like that.
Yeah, we can totally talk about it later. I can almost guarantee this won't be my last trip to Cuba. It's such a spectacular place. And I know so many people that have been there and people that go back like year after year too. I mean, just that have just fallen in love with it. So I'm really excited to do this trip.
That's also on my bucket list of places to go. So Brett, if people are wanting to actually book, maybe they want to go fishing with all of us together for this Cuba trip, what's the best way for them to, or maybe they want to go steelhead fishing or sea trout, you know, like
sure.
There's so many options that you can provide. You can, like, anybody who probably calls you, you can find a specific place that would be a good fit for them. What's the best way for them to do that?
The best way is probably to check out my website. It's tailoutanglers.com. I've got all of my trips and descriptions and instruction and on there and all sorts of stuff. There's a few videos like you'd mentioned. And then all my contact info is on there too. Brett, B-R-E-T-T at tailoutanglers.com is my email. That's usually the best way to get a hold of me because I'm on the water a lot and I can respond, you know, thoughtfully when I get home at night. And I've got Instagram. That's my only like real social media. It's just at tailoutanglers. And if you want to see a picture of my, what we were talking about before we started recording, my destroyed truck,
I was just about to say, if you go onto his Instagram, everyone know that Brett is okay. Cause like you said, your truck is destroyed because of,
yeah, I hit an elk, last week on I-90 going, driving to the Yakima River really early in the morning, trying to get the early morning, stonefly, dry fly bite, and hit an elk, a full grown, cow elk. And, I don't have any word on my truck if they're going to total it or not yet. But it is pretty hammered. And there's a video on my Instagram of all the damage. And, luckily my boat was okay.
Can we just say it hit your windshield was totally destroyed. How did you, when that impact happened, how did that feel? Cause it looks like
awful.
Yeah. Awful. Like seatbelt burns, everything. Yeah. Seatbelt burn.
No, you know, I mean, maybe this is kind of gross, but you know, I hit a soft object and it was obliterated. So, while it was a huge impact and, it shattered my windshield and my driver's door and tore my mirror off and damaged the whole driver's side of my truck. The elk was in a bunch of pieces all over the road.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and I was doing like 60 or 62 or something like that on the freeway towing my boat. I wasn't going super fast. It was dark. You know, I'm towing a boat on, you know, going over a mountain pass and, something I do all the time, but, yeah. And it was just like a bomb went off, you know, when the windows exploded and I was able to pull over, quickly and, you know, I was covered in glass head to toe. It was spitting glass out, you know, it was in my mouth and I just had a few little cuts on my forehead and a little cuts on my hand, but I didn't know, you know, what the damage was to, I didn't know if I'd broken bones or if I was spurting blood and couldn't see it. So I crawled out of my truck and it's dark, like dark, dark. And I'm just, you know, doing the pat down, seeing if all my bones are working and joints and limbs. And I see a little bit of blood, but I can't, you know, I don't know what's going on. I can't tell.
You're in shock.
Totally. Yeah. And this guy pulls over and he goes, "Hey man, is that all your stuff in the road?" And I was like, "I don't know." I was like, you know, there's an elk in the road I just hit And I was like, my oars, my anchor, my cooler, who knows what's in the middle of the road, right? Like, I know I have my boat, but that's about it.
Because were you meeting clients to take people fishing?
Yeah. Yeah. I was meeting clients in like, you know, an hour after that or whatever. And yeah, it's like, I tried to call 911 to get, you know, the troopers to come out because I didn't know what was in the road and cars could be hitting that or whatever.
Oh,
I didn't
know
if I needed an ambulance, which I didn't, luckily. And I was like, hey, can you call 911? Like, my phone's not going through. It took me like six times to get through. And he goes, yeah, sure. And he just like walks back to his truck and gets in and drives away.
I was like, what?
I was like, okay, what? Dude, thanks for the help.
What? Is this like, was you obviously Seattle? I told you they're a little moody. I've been to Seattle. Some people are moody. Not all of the Seattle people. Not like you, Brett.
Actually, there were several people. I was there for hours because I was waiting for a tow truck and it got light out and everything. And my buddy came and got my boat for me and took it to his house and was waiting for a truck. And several people pulled over just to see if I was okay because they saw the carnage on the road and saw me, a smashed up truck just sitting there. So that was really encouraging.
You look at that video, Brett, I would think that someone died.
I think I'm lucky that I was in a big truck and not essentially unhurt. It could have been so much worse. And I feel very fortunate to have just walked away.
So how did that phone call go with your clientele? Were you like, hello, this is Brett?
I texted him after I talked to the trooper and insurance. And I was like, hey man, like, not going to make it, hit an elk. And I didn't hear back. And I called him, left a message, didn't hear. And I just don't know if he got any of them or he was driving too. And he texts me and he's like, hey, I'm here. I'll see you in a minute. And I was like, so I called him again. I was like, hey man, sent you a text and an email or a voicemail. I guess you didn't get it. I was like, I hit an elk. I'm not making it. He's like, dude, I saw you on the way over. And I was like, oh, okay.
He wasn't the guy that was like, did you leave anything? Sorry, I got to go. Yep, I'm calling 911. Yeah, right? I got to go fishing though.
Yeah, no, it wasn't him. But he didn't know what my truck looked like or whatever. But he was like, I didn't put two and two together. But he goes, I saw the boat. I saw the truck. He's like, oh man. And then he also saw me on the way back. Because I was still sitting there. I was sitting there for hours waiting for a tow truck. But
he just honks his horn. Beep, beep. Hi, Brett.
Yeah, exactly. And my sister-in-law saw me. Several friends of mine saw me when I posted that Instagram. They were like, that was you on the side of the road? And I was like, yeah.
Oh, gosh, Brett. That is horrible. I mean, what a good way. I mean, I'm glad that you are safe. But it's just one of those experiences, too, that – I don't know, probably puts everything in perspective, and you probably appreciate going down to Cuba and all these experiences. Cause, you know, not like the guy with the dildo, like, oh, I could die right now on this mountain, but you know, but yeah, I think it's one of those things that when you have life experience like that, that, you know, you kind of probably in the moment you're like, okay, what do I do next? But I'm sure it probably settles in like that could have been hell a whole lot worse.
Yeah. Yeah. It puts things into, you know, a little better perspective for sure. I'm extremely fortunate to have walked away from that. It was not a good time.
Like we said,
not at all.
Like we said earlier, when I was working at the bar and there was an ER doctor, I was like, what is my recommendation? He's like, don't have a motorcycle. I've seen in rural Montana. And he's like, because I've seen so many people, motorcycles, not just in car accidents, but hit wildlife. And he's like, there's no recovering that. I'm like, oh, enough said.
No, there's nothing to protect you.
Yeah, nothing. Like, leather isn't going to stop something like that from an animal hitting you, especially something. Anyways. But I can't thank you enough, Brett, for joining me today and sharing your stories. And I really do want to get to Cuba. Like, let's make that happen. Yeah. And also, actually, listening about the sea trout, that is something I've never done before. And I would love to do something like that. So, and Seattle's only like, I think it's only like 9-hour drive from Missoula. So, maybe I'll get that.
I drive your direction all the time.
Well, let's,
from Missoula, it's 7 hours.
Is it 7 hours? I thought so too.
Yeah.
Let's make this happen. Yeah. You come fishing with us in Missoula.
Yeah.
Jess and I will come out to Seattle.
Go to thefebruaryroom.com where you can access a complete library of our podcast and read more about our guests, their fishing stories, and favorite fly patterns. We're always looking for exceptional fly fishing yarns, and if you have one to spin, shoot us an email at info@thefebruaryroom.com. The February Room is always free, but if you feel like throwing a nickel in the pond, we appreciate any additional listener support. For companies and individuals interested in sponsorship opportunities, please contact us for our media kit. Thanks for stopping by the February Room, and we'll see you down here next week.